In chapter 11 of the book of Numbers, Moses had had enough. It was very early in the Exodus journey. More than 1 million people were following him. They went across the Red Sea without getting wet, and now they've been led out into the desert. And they've recently found out that they're going to be there a lot longer than they thought they were. At first, it was only going to take 40 days, but because they doubted the Lord and refused to trust in him, he's going to leave them out there for 40 years. But no sooner are they across the banks of the Red Sea, the people have started to complain against God and Moses. You've heard it all before. It's too hot during the day. It's too cold at night. We have nothing to eat, nothing to drink. Things were better for us when we were slaves back in Egypt. Have you brought us out here to die? And Moses can't take it anymore. Just before this passage here today, he said, Lord, if this is all this is going to be, is you telling me what to tell them and then complaining to me and telling me to tell you their complaints, I want no part of it. Just kill me now. Moses would rather die than have to continue to listen to that grumbling. He would rather die than have to continue doing God's will. God in his mercy decides to lighten the burden he has placed on Moses. And that is why he said, choose 70 elders, bring them to the meeting tent, and the spirit I've given to you, I will share with them so they will assist you in the governance of these people. Well, that was all going according to plan, except when Eldad and Medad were missing. They weren't there at the appointed time. Joshua doesn't like the fact that Eldad and Medad, who weren't there, received the same spirit and are out there prophesying in God's name. And Joshua thinks Moses should make them stop, cease and desist. But as far as Moses is concerned, if anybody is speaking well of God and singing God's praise, then he wishes that all of those people who are out there in the desert would receive that same spirit. So rather than stopping those two men who missed the meeting in the tent, he wants everyone to have that same spirit, to start singing God's praises and stop complaining against God because they just don't think his blessings are good enough, which really means it's just a failure to trust in him to provide for all of their needs. Jesus has been called the new Moses, and they have a lot in common. 1,000 years separate their births. But when Moses and Jesus were born, both of them had rulers trying to kill them. In the case of Moses, it was the Pharaoh Ramses II. In the case of Jesus, it was the Herod the Great. When they grew up, Moses would be able to part the Red Sea. Jesus could walk on water, calm stormy seas. Moses turned the Nile into blood. Jesus turns water into wine and then into his blood. Moses was able to feed the Israelites with bread from heaven. Jesus is the bread from heaven. Moses was leading slaves to freedom. Jesus is leading us free from slavery to sin. Moses was leading the Israelites back to the promised land of Israel. Jesus is leading us to the promised land of heaven. But one other similarity we see that comes out in these readings today, chapter 11 of the book of Numbers and the end of the 9th chapter of the Gospel of Mark, is how much Moses and Jesus desire that all people would be speaking God's praises. We've already heard about the situation there in the desert with Moses. Here with Jesus, one of the disciples comes up to him and said, this man who is not part of our group is out there casting out demons in your name. I think you should punish him for it. But rather than punish him, Jesus thinks that means our gospel is being preached. The message is being spread. God's work is being accomplished because he didn't want just the priests to be casting out the demons. He didn't want just the deacons to be proclaiming the gospel. He wanted all disciples to be involved in making disciples. He wanted all his people to be involved in saving all his people. Man helping man to find heaven's gate. But then Jesus starts to talk about saving us from what? Not just from sin, not just from death, but from Gehenna. We hear that now and again in the Gospels, and you'd have to study archaeology perhaps to have a better understanding of it. For me, it was always confusing as a child to hear about Gehenna. You see, I'll let you in on a little secret. My parents, before I was born, migrated to Michigan from Ohio. My father went to Ohio State. But my mother's brother lived in a Columbus suburb called Gehenna. And we had to go there once a year. I'd hear about Gehenna being hell, and then we'd be sent to Gehenna to go see Uncle Ed. Very confusing. Gehenna was an actual place. And just like Jesus used images from everyday living to convince people of God's truth, Gehenna was something all the people in Jerusalem knew about, and they feared it beyond anything else. Let's remember that before it was Israel, it was called the land of Canaan. That's because the Canaanites lived in it. And the Canaanites, before the time of Abraham, were a pagan people who worshipped a deity called Moloch. And the Canaanites believed the way to seek blessings from Moloch and to appease any destruction he might have planned for them is to sacrifice their children. And the Canaanites sacrificed their children to Moloch just outside of Jerusalem, down the cliff in a valley called Gehenna. And thus, with the blood of so many innocents having been shed there, that place was believed to be cursed for all ages. No one wanted to visit it. No one wanted to live in it. No one wanted to end up there. They avoided it at all costs. And since it was right down the cliff from Jerusalem and it served no other purpose, it became, for all intents and purposes, the town dump of Jerusalem. If you had a poor person with no one to bury them, dump their body in Gehenna. If you had a dead animal, what are we going to do with that? Dump it into Gehenna. What about all of our trash? Dump it into Gehenna. That's why there was an unquenchable fire. Not just because of all the gas emanating from all that rotting flesh and garbage, but also because to fight off the putrid stench that otherwise would have hung like a cloud all over Jerusalem, the municipal authority kept fires burning all the way around it to try to keep the smell in and to keep the people out. Everybody knew about Gehenna. Everybody thought Gehenna was hell on earth. And that's why Jesus uses that image to convince them of the reality that there is a hell and there is a hell fire. So that if he could convince them that hell is someplace you'd never want to be, then people would start living towards a different goal and storing up for themselves treasures in heaven. We need to realize the realities of Gehenna in the present day, because there are so many people that if they believe in Satan, it's only because they want to worship him, but they don't believe that he can damn them to hell. They don't believe that there is a hell to be damned to. We would do well to study the diary of Saint Faustina, that saint who was a nun in Poland in the early 1930s, who every night when she was trying to go to bed was kept up because Jesus kept appearing to her and he gave her a vision of hell. And in St. Faustina's vision of hell, she commented that most of the people that were in it never thought that it existed, and so they did nothing to avoid being in it in the first place. We have been told time and again, when we begin to stop believing in sin or Satan or hell, pretty soon we stop believing in God or Jesus, because if Jesus is a savior and we don't believe we have anything that we need saving from, then we cease storing up for ourselves treasures in heaven. We end up like the people that James was talking about in the second reading, whose flesh is rotting off of their bones because they're living for sin and selfishness rather than for God and for God's people. And so for Jesus, who was willing to risk it all and give it all for us in our salvation, who gave up his lofty perch in heaven to come down to the putrid stench, not only of Gehenna, but also of humanity, he was on a mission, a rescue mission, to save us not only from hell, to save us not only from sin and death, but also so that we may be in exile here no longer. This world so full of sin and selfishness, COVID and cancer, disappointment and death. Jesus came to get us out of here and take us somewhere better. And that, my friends, is the heavenly Jerusalem. That is the place where we all hope to be. And as sad as we are for those who pass in this life, if we believe they are there, if we live so we can be there, then surely all of us will experience happiness on the other side. So we have to strive for it. We have to sacrifice for it. Like Jesus, we have to suffer for it and for others, for their salvation and ours, that all of us may not only see the face of God in heaven one day, but see the face of each other forever.